Good morning.
Good Sunday morning.
How are you?
I'm not sleepy. I was going to say I'm sleepy, but I'm actually not sleepy. I feel pretty caught up on sleep, so I'm good. I'm good. How about you?
I am amazing, actually. I won't lie. I woke up about 20 minutes ago. So it was like so nice to sleep in.
Good for you.
I know.
That's amazing. Well, welcome to the Nice Hair Podcast. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Haley.
And I guess we're talking about waking up because we don't normally just wake straight up and record a podcast, but that's what we had time for this week.
It is, and I'm here for it.
Yeah, yeah. Usually it's like afternoon recording, so no, this is perfect for me.
I like an early morning, pretty much anything. I start my appointments early. I'm just a morning girl.
I can really do anything. I don't feel like I tend to be as early as some people who are truly morning people. So I don't know. Like, I've been around so many people that are like, I'm a morning person too. I wake up at 4:45 and go to the gym. And then I'm like, oh, I'm not a morning person then for sure.
Yeah, I've gone back and forth with the super early gym routine. And I actually love it. I feel like I'm the most productive in my life when that's my routine. But sometimes it's just not feasible. I'm in a phase of my life where it's not realistic for my life right now.
Yeah, well,
so
you can do whatever works.
Yeah, you have to. But
so today I am really excited. I was telling Haley earlier in the week, I had a really interesting phone consultation. If you guys are familiar with doing like a Jotform or a WooFoo or any type of online, I guess, form to get your clients kind of in to the, I'm about to say interviewing process, but I guess consultation process, then you will kind of understand what I'm saying. If you're not familiar, with using a form to have your clients fill out before you have them come in or talk to them for any type of consultation, then yeah, I just wanted to explain myself there because that's what I use. And I know a lot of other stylists use it. So the clients go into either my Instagram or my online website and they fill out a pretty quick form. And that gives me their email, their phone number, some other information about them. And then I set up a phone consultation. So I had a phone consultation with this woman and she was very, very nice. Haley, I don't know if you're able to tell this, but I'm interested to know, can you tell when you get on a phone consultation with someone if they have had a frustrating process with other like applications, if maybe they filled out two other applications and then they found you and then they filled out your application and then, you know, before they spoke to you, they were just like, what is this whole process? Is anyone get a hold of me? Like, have you had people kind of like have a frustrated experience before?
Yeah, for sure. Actually pretty frequently. I have quite a few out of state clients specifically that I'm like, hey, I know someone and so-and-so in your area. They're like, yeah, it was too hard to try to get a hold of them and I would just rather come here. So it's definitely been, I've gotten quite a few clients because they've been frustrated with the experience with other stylists in their area.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, to be transparent, years ago, and I mean, who even knows how many times? I mean, communication is, that's why it's like so important to, I think, just communicate with clients because it's easy to drop the ball because you don't know, number one, exactly what kind of standards these people have, and you don't know what they've been through previously. I've definitely dropped the ball before. I learned a lot from, you know, receiving applications and then not being timely and getting back with people, or, you know, whatever the circumstance was.
Mm-hmm.
But I have found, that's why I wanted to talk about this, and I know this is common. I have found that this all kind of ties in to like a first impression that you make with a client. So this is the first time, you know, you're interacting with them. And I have found they value you so much more, and they are so much more excited to work with you when you are prompt when getting back with someone, and when you know, walk them into the next step. So not only just like reach back out to them, whether it's through email or text or calling, but then you're like, hey, I received your application. And, you know, a lot of people I think have set up, I think Shayna has this set up, our girlfriend, like an automated response where when someone submits a form, they'll get an automated response like, thank you for submitting this, I'll be in touch soon or whatever. I just try to get back to people as soon as possible within like working business hours and set up a phone consultation like right then. So that way they don't feel like no one's ever going to get back to me.
Totally. Hannah, I think it's almost important for us to even pause and talk about the importance of the system and flow of not booking appointments through DMs, because a lot of stylists, especially now as in a helping other stylists with their business, like in a coaching space, it's so interesting how everybody does things so differently. And there are stylists who, you know, it's like they have clients contacting them through Facebook, through Instagram. That's how they're doing all of their bookings, or people are finding their number on Google and they're calling them, or it's just this wild, it's almost like the Wild West. And I've had, and same for you, we've had such a systematized process for so long that you don't realize that you need something in line and in place to make this kind of flow. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, and if you don't have something and you're reaching back out to clients and you feel like, I need clients, so I have to reach out to people this way. You don't. I find the easiest website to be Jotform, jotform.com. You can create a free form that you just put. You can, even if you don't have a link tree, even if you don't have a website, you can just literally put this link in your bio on Instagram, and clients will fill it out really quick, and it will email you every single time a client fills it out, and then you can reach out to them. Clients, from being a client, from a client perspective, and from having this system in place and having clients do this for 5 years, clients appreciate the formality of it, the professionalism of it, the just the process of it. I think it is too informal, and I think it sets you up to not be taken seriously if you have clients DM you and if you put your cell phone number in your bio just to, you know, call or text.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think it's such an amazing way to have everything in one space. So if somebody's DMing you, and it also helps you weed out clients who may not be a correct fit for you, right? I know if somebody isn't willing to follow the flow of the system I've set in place and they're not willing to fill out my form, or if somebody DMs me and they're like, I don't want to fill this form out, I just want to book. Hey, I'm so sorry. This is a part of the process that I have set in place, and I don't book consultations or new clients unless you complete this form. And if that's not a step that they are willing to take, that's just not a client that I'm willing to take on, because this process that I have works. I, you know, it's how I've built my entire business, and That's not something at this point I'm willing to compromise on. The times there have been, I would say maybe a handful of times, like I could count on one hand the amount of times I've just kind of made an exception to my rule. And every client that I have done that for has been a nightmare and has been a client that I have had to let go within, I would say, the first two appointments, either after their initial appointment or their first move up. And that's, I've had so to have an uncomfortable conversation, it always in person, and it just, the whole salon is staring at you. It's so awkward, but it's always when I make exceptions to my own rules.
That's so true. And some people have an entire clientele of clients like that. And I have, I mean, you know, when I first started doing extensions, I did not set myself up to be taken serious and to be able to organize my own business. Like you were saying, that's a great point. Just like make it easier on yourself by having everything in one place. And so you're not waking up at 1 o'clock in the morning, like with heart palpitations, thinking about the three people in your, you know, DMs on Instagram that you haven't gotten back to.
Right.
You know, it's just too much of a mess. And like, as you grow, or as I've grown, I am able to put more on my plate and to keep things organized because I have like my applications through JotForm or, you know, a multitude of other things. But you have to set yourself up to, number one, have a good first impression with clients and have them respect you as a professional, and you'll get naturally a higher level of clientele from that. Because speaking from experience, when clients are, you know, have class, have money, maybe they run a small business themselves or have a professional job and have done well in life, they're not willing to pay someone who also isn't a professional or doesn't act like a professional, isn't showing up as a professional. They're not willing to pay and spend time, you know, 4, 5, 6 hours with someone when they have so many options. It's a no-brainer. I don't want to book Botox or any other professional service or beauty service with someone I text or DM on Instagram. I want a professional.
Yeah, I completely agree. I remember years ago, and this was when I knew what I was doing was working. I had a woman on our phone consultation. She was like, "Haley, this whole entire process was so neat." She's like, "I come from a corporate world, like a very well-paying corporate job, great position in her corporate job." And she was like, "I have never worked with a stylist where it was, one, such a clear system. Boundaries are set right off the rip. Pricing, it has, you know, been basically laid out. Like, you still have to have the phone consultation to, you know, narrow things down." But she's like, my expectations were so clear coming on this call. And she was like, I just want to take a moment and appreciate, you know, thank you for that as a client. Like, you made this such an easy, easy thing." And I was sitting back, I was like, oh my gosh, because it was just something we were taught to do. And I was just doing it, but I'd never had a client acknowledge how powerful it was. And so it was such a neat moment. I still remember that client's name today. Her name is Jennifer, and she is wonderful. And it was such a cool experience to have one of your clients acknowledge it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I love that. I love that she even took the time to kind of, you know, like, let you know what a great experience that was without being prompted or you having to ask her. That's amazing.
Totally. And I think too, and this is something, as you keep talking about, well, when I first started extensions, it was still kind of chaotic. And that's the great thing about your onboarding form that you create, right? As you have experiences, positive and negative, with new clients or your system, you can tweak your form and change it so that, again, that expectation is laid out right there in front of you. I learned I have to put my cancellation policy on there. What happens if somebody no-shows me? What happens if they're a client from another stylist? What happens? You know what I mean? Because I remember I went through a period where I would have girls that are like, hey, I got my extensions done here, but you're closer. Can I just come in for you to do my move up? And Hannah, I kid you not, I probably had like 3 to 5 no-shows because I didn't take a credit card from these girls who were already wearing extensions, right? I didn't collect a deposit. I didn't have anything in place where they were committed to that appointment. Where no-shows and last-minute cancellations, I don't really experience that now. And so that was where I changed my form. And it was like, okay, if you're coming to me from another stylist, you know, I had one exception at first where it was like, I'll take you on, but you pay a deposit and your initial move up per row is more expensive than my normal move up, only because a lot of times it ends up almost being a full application anyways, just because you do things a little bit differently than the stylist. Well, then what happened when I started doing that? I found that either the hair was trash that these clients were coming in with. I specifically remember I had one client, she came in with 2 rows and each of her wefts, she probably had like 25 wefts, but they were all cut in like 2-inch sections.
What?
To make up her row. And I looked at her and I said, I can't put these back in your head. And she's sobbing, like she is bawling her eyes out. But it was one of those things I didn't know until I got in there. I took the row out and I cut the row apart because there wasn't really a way, like something was off, but I wasn't sure what it was. And I said, I can't put these back in your head. Like you have to get all new hair. And she's bawling her eyes out because she had had this hair for, you know, 6 weeks, but something was off with it. Like she was like, it's just not a good experience. So then I changed it even from there. Hey, if you're coming in with hair from another stylist, I'm not willing to take you on unless you're willing and ready to purchase new hair. If not, you just need to see out the life of this hair with that stylist. And then you can come on board as a client with me, but everybody purchases new hair. Everybody is treated as a new client unless I personally know the stylist that they're coming from. And, you know, it's like, oh, hey, I'm moving from Florida or something. You know what I mean? Like I've become so strict about it because it was horrible. That was one of the worst experiences. And she wasn't mad at me, but it made the first appointment that we had, it set the tone. You know what I mean? Like through the whole entire 6 hours, she's on again, off again, crying. She's on the phone with her dad, like freaking out. It was not fun. So then it was like, it changed again, how I interact with clients coming from another stylist. And it can feel for the client like these rules are outrageous. This is ridiculous. But unfortunately, because of the experiences that I've personally had, it's like you have to be specific and you have to get pickier, but it has also done wonders for my business.
Yeah. And from that experience, Haley, I think about from her point of view, what, you know, this isn't your fault, but because she went to someone who, you know, did something crazy different that you couldn't work with, that shifted her first experience or her first impression and first experience with you, which does really set the tone for your whole relationship, which is why like I'm so obsessed with being super professional and kind of clearing a space to start all over with a client, like you were saying. And so I personally, my go-to saying for people when they're coming from another stylist or if they have hair that they want to use, I just kind of I don't put it on me, but I take responsibility for it by saying, you know, if the hair is usable or if it's brand new, I totally get why you would want to use it. Unfortunately, I can't guarantee my services with hair that I didn't purchase. So I'm pretty much like, hey, this is just where I can't say this is going to be the experience and the service that I provide to every single one of my clients with outside hair. Like, it's just not what I do. And nobody's ever been able to really like rebuttal with me in any way. Cause I feel like that makes sense. You know, I can't take another artist's tools or another person's things and say that now this is my thing, or this is something that has my stamp of approval. Like, it's impossible for me.
Totally.
So you know, I make everyone start. I don't care if you've had extensions in for 2 weeks and, you know, the hair is, like I said, or like you were saying, brand new. Like, everyone, if you're a new client to me, you're a new client to me.
Yeah.
And I think that just makes things easier. And you know, it's funny, I had two consultations this last week, and one of the girls actually, I had a consultation with her, I guess. It was years ago, and she had hair that she wanted to use. Yeah, it was like 2.5 years ago. She was in a different state and had like a travel position in her job and was closer to me, like permanently. But she'd gotten her initial set of extensions done in a different state. And on the phone consultation, I let her know, like, hey, you know, I can't use someone else's hair. And so she didn't book with me, which is fine. But I completely forgot about it. I mean, after a while, I think we have a lot going on and you forget. And so I had this consultation set up with her, not knowing that I had already talked to her before at some point. And she booked with me and she told me, she was like, yeah, well, when I talked to you before, you know, I know you let me know you can't use someone else's hair. And I loved my extensions before, but then I took them out for a long time. But then, you know, eventually she came back to me, but she wasn't offended. She didn't have a bad attitude. She wasn't anything. She was just like, yeah, I remember talking to you and I know what your policy is. And I, you know, she was just letting me know, like, I know I can't reuse any of that hair that I took out. And I was like, ooh, I had no idea this was my, you know, second time talking to her, but she already knew my rules, you know, and my rules were consistent from when I talked to her last. And that made her comfortable with me. It's not like she was mad 2 years ago when I told her I can't reuse that hair.
Right.
Because I didn't have an attitude or anything about it. You know, I was just very calm and like, this is what I do. So I think sometimes we internalize setting that boundary or saying no to clients more than they do. Like, if it's a rule, it's a rule. That's a neutral space. That's not a personal attack on someone.
Right.
So it was just really interesting. My other consultation that I was initially started talking about, the point of this podcast was my client who I spoke to was frustrated because I think, you know, she'd maybe filled out, like I said, 2 or 3 other applications and then found me and was just kind of sitting around waiting. So by the time I talked to her, I was the last application she filled out, but the only person to get back to her. And she was just really, really just so happy to tell me that she was like, I cannot tell you how nice it is that your pricing was on your application and that the expectation that I put at the top of my application, which was, you know, I'll get back to you within 2 business days or 48 hours. I can't remember what it says. I just redid it. But she's like, I cannot tell you how nice it was to have that expectation and to know exactly what I'm getting into, exactly what the next step will be, and not just feel like these people have no idea what they're doing.
Right.
Pricing and location are the two big things that stylists miss and mess up on when first kind of attracting a client or trying to get them into your quote unquote funnel. I hate that word because it's so overused in our industry and no one ever explains what it means. And as hair professionals, how are we supposed to know all these marketing terms? But a funnel is just basically how you get people to put in an application with you and then get into your chair ultimately. So, but you have to make things very, very, very clear for people, because if they do not know where you do your services at or where you're located. And if they do not know how much they can expect to pay, they're over it. And it's so frustrating. And it's so silly that we aren't screaming it as soon as people get onto our page.
Well, but I also think it saves, you know, having your pricing, even if it's just a ballpark range, what the expectation is, if you put it out there and you have it listed, you're also eliminating and saving yourself time with clients that potentially can't afford the service that you're offering. I don't want to get on the phone with somebody who ultimately can't afford to be my client if I don't have to, right? When I have the pricing laid out and quoted, and then they can look at it from the comfort of their home or sitting in their car, and they can be like, oh, wow, it's this much money. Okay, that doesn't work with my budget right now. So I'm going to continue moving on to find somebody else, right? So why it is this big mystery to get a price quote before? I don't want to have to sell somebody on the consultation call, realistically. I want them to get on a call with me to be able to have the couple questions that they need answered, for me to get clarity around the length of their hair, the color of their hair, and then to tell them what day and time I'm available and to collect their credit card. You know what I mean? That's, to me, the entire point of what we're doing. If a client is going through all of that trouble to send you photos, to go through your form, and they can't get a price quote, it's a waste of time. It's a waste of everybody's time. And I think you're making your job as a stylist a lot harder, because they just want to, I want to eliminate people that can't afford to work with me. You know what I mean? Or I want people to be like, oh, great, that works with my budget now, and I want to move forward with this appointment. I just think so many are doing themselves a disservice with that.
Yeah. And you have to remember, I was thinking about this. Some people are looking for the most, I mean, you guys would be so surprised how many clients are looking for a more expensive stylist, because to them, it kind of almost guarantees the work in a way. I mean, someone who does crappy work is not going to have, the confidence to charge that much. So people who are ready to book and who have money, a lot of times will look for a pricier stylist. And if you're not able to provide a ballpark figure for, let's just say, 18-inch extensions, 22-inch extensions, and if maybe you do 26-inch extensions, if you can't just give a ballpark for that first appointment, it seems misleading. You don't seem trustworthy. You seem sneaky. Like, clients can't figure out why they can't just get a general idea of how much money they're looking at spending. It is, like you were saying, Haley, a massive thing for the stylist and the client.
Totally.
And it starts that when they see your name, it makes a bad impression. If they, it automatically creates an emotion inside of them that this is confusing, this seems misleading, I can't get clear on this. And then, maybe they run it, you end up on their homepage, or they see a TikTok of you, or they stumble upon your website and they remember, like, oh, this person's already frustrating, I'm not going to waste my time with it.
Totally. Well, absolutely. But I think it's important that stylists understand also where that mysterious kind of pricing thing comes from. It's actually a sales tactic. So there is a thing in the sales world where if you are selling something under $1,000, like $999 and below, you should be able to click to purchase online, right? Because there isn't as much sales psychology that has to go into things that cost under $1,000. And in the sales world, selling higher ticket items, there is a deeper psychological conversation that a lot of times needs to happen, unless your social media has done a really great job of selling your client, which a lot of stylists aren't doing that on the front end. They're not selling through their content, or they're not selling in the way that they should be so that their client is ready to make a purchase. So that's where the phone consultation actually comes in. If you actually break it down and look at it from a selling perspective, it's a sales call. It's not a consultation. And the objective is for you to get them on the phone, quote them this high, you know, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 service, and then have the skill set that stylists aren't taught to have a sales conversation to sell your client into being your client. So that's where that stems from, right? And the mysterious pricing, it's like, I'd rather get you on the phone and tell you why extensions are amazing and why you need them, blah, blah, blah. Have you want them? And then by the time you hear the price, like, yeah, it's uncomfortable, but I've been selling you, so you should be ready to make that purchase on the phone call. So it is a, there is an actual psychology and sales tactic approach behind it, but stylists aren't taught the art of selling themselves and selling their service in that capacity most of the time. So a lot of the times it doesn't work that way.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
And people follow that model a lot because they see other successful people creating that mystery or that sales seduction. And they think without having any type of seducing quality in their brand or in their business, that's what I should do. I should walk people along one fucking question at a time. No one has time for that. No. Get rid of it.
They don't.
Get rid of it. It's incredibly, like, my blood pressure just got higher. No one has time to answer one question at a time to get to the end of your form. Different world now. That doesn't work. You can create that mystery, that seduction, that type of feeling in your business with your, you are the brand. So you get to create that seduction or that attraction that
through your social.
Yeah, potential clients have for you on any given platform, or all of them if you want. You get to decide who you're seducing, who you're kind of luring in, who you're kind of strip teasing with your marketing per se.
Yeah.
You can do that and still provide a ballpark range because there's too many options. And I mean, that's what is kind of fun about being your own brand or being doing that type of sales and marketing, is that, you know, if you have something to offer, you're one of many flavors to the huge sea of clients. So you're going to be somebody's flavor, and they're going to be excited to, you know, spend time with you and get to know you and get your services, but they still need to know about how much they're going to pay for something. It's not as a like a scarce stylist wise market as it was. There's so many stylists that do great work, that do, you know, okay work, and so I think clients have a lot of people to pick from. However, there are going to still be clients that are really, really drawn to you, you know, because you're doing great marketing, because you are staying consistent and have the basics of being a business. But if they get to the end of that line, if they're really excited about, you know, kind of the vibe you put out, and maybe you seem really fun and still professional, or maybe you seem like the like glitz and glammy kind of luxury service they're looking for, if they get to the end of that line and you are a good fit for them, but they cannot figure out how much they're going to spend without actually getting on the phone with you, it's the end of the road.
Mm-hmm.
People don't have time. They don't want to do that.
They don't. And again, I just think it's such an easy way to either attract or eliminate somebody before you have to get on the call. It's just another way of, for me, it's another way of finding who my ideal client is. You know, they get to my form. If I drive somebody and they're like, hey, how much to book with you? I always just send them the link for for my application or my questionnaire, whatever you call it. And, you know, sometimes they come back and they're like, oh, that's too expensive. I'm like, oh, you know, thanks for taking the time to look, whatever. But it's like, I just saved myself, you know, going back and forth with them over message and then saving myself a 15-minute phone call for them once they hear the price, the final price for them to say, oh, I can't afford this. I just think that transparency, that was a game changer for me because I tried the whole mysterious, have them click through. I tried it. I hated it. I didn't like it. And I got that feedback. I love that you had everything just laid out right there that I could, you know, see it. I use WooFoo for my application and I always have used WooFoo. And then the other one that I will use, I use it for different things, but is Typeform. So I know you really like Jotform. So I bounce back between Typeform and WooFoo. So my extension application is on WooFoo. It's always been on WooFoo. And like I said, it's pretty much stayed the same over the years. I have just tweaked it and gotten even more clear in my expectations as my experiences as a stylist have popped up.
Speaking about applications, I think too that I know, Haley, I think your application is very, very simple. Mine is extremely simple. I think a lot of times because we're creative people, because stylists, you know, we basically bedazzle, you know, everything in life for a living. Like we make things prettier right. For a living. I think stylists get in their head about this application form and think that, and we do it with a million other things with our website, with, you know, stylists will have two clients and they can't figure out why they don't have more clients, but instead of putting themselves out there on Instagram or TikTok or whatever, they spend 6 hours creating a logo, you know, and it's like, what are you doing? So without, you just need to produce something because at the end of the day, clients don't care about your font. And, you know, if you're just one person running a business. Now, if you're Nike, a font, or if you're Whole Foods, a font, yes, can shift emotion slightly. But starting out, you don't need a logo. Stop it. Just like stop. You need a form that is clear and basic and to the point. And you need to let people know who you are so they can figure out if spending time with you and paying for your services is going to be a great experience for them and it's going to be worth their time. And I think as creative people, a lot of times stylists get, and I do think it is a form of like self-sabotaging kind of procrastination that is way deeper than, you know, we can say that for another episode. But if you're struggling with like, well, WooFoo or Jotform or Typeform, I can't find the right form to plug in, or I don't know, it just doesn't look whatever. It's like, just do a black and white form. Just do, you know.
It's so simple. It's so basic.
Yeah, mine's like, I have like a couple colors that I stick with as far as like with my branding. So mine's like a pink background with, I think, black writing. And it doesn't have like fancy writing on it. It doesn't have a logo. It doesn't have any type of graphic in it. It's just a form. And I do think a lot of times stylists get caught up on, I want this to look a certain way because I want it to be presented. Clients don't care.
No, and it's actually interesting that the conversation kind of went this way because I had somebody on Instagram this week send me a message because I had in one of my question boxes someone ask, do you think you need a website to be successful as a stylist? And I thought it was such an interesting question. And it was actually a conversation topic I was excited to talk to you about because our client experience, like my clients mostly come from Instagram, where I know you have a lot of clients find you through your website. So, but my point to this stylist was, no, I don't think you do, but I do think it's important to have some kind of an onboarding application, like what we're talking about with the Jotform, the WooFoo, whatever. But I don't think you have to specifically have a website in the beginning to be successful. I built an entire business and clientele off of just my WooFoo form. But so then this girl followed up with that, a different girl, in my DM, and she just said, hey, I am just wondering, you know, are you diversifying your marketing across platforms? Because what happens, you know, if you don't have a website, and what happens if Instagram just goes, you know, turns to MySpace and disappears tomorrow, right? So there were a few levels to her question. And in my response, it was like, I get what you're asking. But for most stylists, right, they have a hard enough time putting together a marketing strategy for one platform, let alone trying to post across all of the platforms. So that's where focusing in on one, specifically the one that you utilize, enjoy using the most, that you consume the most content on, I think becomes important. Is a website an amazing tool and landing page to have? Absolutely. But I don't think websites for most stylists are doing what they think they're doing. You have to either yourself or be paying somebody or know somebody who can optimize your SEO and all of that sort of thing to even make your website do what you want it to do, right? And so obviously collecting emails, you know, that's where having your clients' emails in your system for their booking appointments, collecting emails is one of the most valuable things, right? Because if Instagram were to disappear today, you would need to be able to reach out to those clients and have a touch point with them and say, hey, this is where I'm going to be moving all of my content over to. You know what I mean? So I got the point of what she was asking, but I also was like, I can't, you know, build my, I'm not going to make a business decision based off of, you know, what if Instagram leaves tomorrow? If Instagram leaves tomorrow, we'll deal with that tomorrow. But I'm not going to stress myself out over the possibility of it potentially disappearing. Is it a great idea to market across multiple platforms? Absolutely. Is it realistic and feasible for most stylists? I don't think so.
So many great points here. And
I loved her question. I was like, man, like, it was so articulate and well thought out. And I was like, man, like, this is like making me like sit down and be like, okay, I gotta like put some thought into this response. But I know, I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm so sorry.
No, you're okay.
I just know for me, like, my website is specifically a landing page, right? I don't utilize it as probably I potentially should. I know the girl who built it, you know, did my SEO. So if you look up Columbus Extensions, like, I'm on the first page that you can find. But for me, my ideal client finds me on Instagram and is usually stalking my content for a minimum of 6 months before they ever book an appointment with me. And I have now learned if somebody finds me from strictly a website or Googling me, more than likely they're not my ideal client. They have not had time to get to know me and my content, who I am, what I'm about. And so a lot of times there are like red flags pinging left and right when somebody says that they found me strictly through Google.
And I have a very different, this is so interesting. We should do a whole episode on this because, you know, I have a very different experience. And for anybody that doesn't know, I don't know if I said it too, but SEO means search engine optimization. So pretty much it means there are backdoor kind of coding ways that someone who builds websites and does all this internet stuff can set your website up to kind of skip the line and jump through some weird internet hoops. I do not know how it all works, but they can set your website up to A, pop up higher on the list, and B, kind of like not fudge the numbers, but make your website come up before other popular websites. It's not like at all cheating in any way. It's just a coding thing, basically, that tricks the internet into saying that people search for or click on your website more than they actually have, not in a gigantic way. Obviously, whoever's popular, if your location settings are turned on, is going to come up. The most popular websites are going to come up first, but there are ways to kind of skip ahead to the front of the line. Or my website has been successful in this way because I've had HannahDavisHair.com for so long that the longevity of it over time has given me the most clicks and the most traffic, which has moved me and naturally kind of put me towards the top of the first five or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think my website has served me in such great ways because I've had that specific domain or, you know, .com landing site for, I don't know, probably close to 10 years.
Yeah.
And that's why it served me so well. That doesn't mean that someone newer who doesn't have, you know, who hasn't had, hasn't owned a domain for as long wouldn't be successful, because if you hire the right person, it will be. But I would love to do an entire episode about my experience and success with my website and my non-Instagram kind of way of doing things. And I do think you have a point too for people who are like you, Haley, who are really these big, bubbly, very social personalities on different social media platforms. I do think there is that component of finding the right person that's really clicks with you through that. And I don't think it's impossible. It certainly hasn't been for me finding people to click with me through my website. But I do think my target market is different than yours too. And those two things are both successful just in different ways, you know, and that's why you coach to, you know, being so clear about your target market.
I mean, because to me, and it's so interesting, right? We're limited in our knowledge based on our own experiences, right? So I'm only ever going to share and teach things that have worked for me personally. And that's where marketing ideal client has been huge and amazing. But I do love the idea of showing the other side of that, what has worked really well for you. Because it's so different. It's so different for me. And it's, like I said, it's a red flag. If somebody's like, oh, I found you on Google, I'm like, oh, you're more than likely you're not it. Are there some exceptions that could probably be made? Totally. But I know what works for me and my business, and I know the clients that I connect with and how they find me. So,
and a lot of times, like when I hear I found you on Google, like for me, that's a warm, fuzzy, like awesome. Like that's a great thing for me. Isn't that funny?
It's really funny. It's really, really funny. But that's where it's important to know who your ideal client is, how they're finding you, because where that's a red flag for me, it's a warm and fuzzy feeling for Hannah. Hannah's like, oh, she's checking my ideal client box, where she does not check my ideal client box. So I think that's where it's important to study your business, to know where most of your clients are coming from. If you have a great in-person referral, if it's like, I have this one client who gets a ton of business and referrals to me, you have to know that about your business, and you have to figure out how to optimize that client, right? That's a client that if they're constantly sending you business, that's a client I throw a bone to, right? Hey, your move up's on me this time. We love that client. We love her. And that's the client where it's like, hey, you've gotten me 5 new clients. Like, your color and your move up are on me this time for like a referral sort of fee, right? And that's a client. I mean, they have to like be driving a significant amount of traffic to you, but you know, it's worth noting what's really, really working for you, for your business, and figuring out how to continue making it work, you know.
Yeah, and tying it all back into kind of the overall topic of this episode, it all kind of begins with first impression and how you how you land and stick with your clients the first and second interaction you have with them. I had a statistic pulled up. This was whatever. I don't have it right now, but I had pulled up some information about first impressions. And I literally, when I was looking about first impression, you know, studies and experiments they've done, I couldn't find a single thing that was like, it doesn't matter. Like, I mean, there's varying percentages on, you know, 70% of how people remember or like hold you in their mind is from the very first time they met you or whatever. But there was literally nothing that was like, just wing it. It doesn't matter. Like everything was like, yes, this is important. Yes, our brains are wired to, for whatever reason, hold on to this specific first or second interaction. And so that's kind of, I feel like that's a, you know, if you can really nail that down and really be on point as far as, you know, from head to toe, inside and out, make sure when you're showing up online or when you are showing up in person or on a phone consultation, that you are being clear, that you are showing up as the best version of yourself, whether in person or whatever. You know, you look nice, your hair's done, you're speaking slowly and clearly with clients, you're giving a reciprocal experience where they have time to answer or ask questions. And they feel like information is provided that's answering their questions. If you can do those things outside of the realm of worrying about technical skills, coloring skills, I mean, I think there's so much emphasis placed on that,
mm-hmm.
you know, for good reason. But I think we can forget the whole other half of our business, which is us, which is literally you in physical form. And I've just become so obsessed with that side of the business that I really, really am interested. And I think it's important to talk about things like first impression and how it's hard to change a bad first impression.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, yeah. I think one of the things that you can see, right, it's so easy for us as stylists to sit and put blame on the client for, you know, them being a shitty client or they're cheap, they don't want to pay me, they blah, blah, blah. But it's, I think when you can start taking complete and total ownership, am I a stylist that is worth paying? Have I set boundaries to protect me as the stylist? What am I doing to attract a higher level of client, right? A client that is going to appreciate me. What kind of stylist do I have to become? What kind of person do I have to become in order to pull and to attract these kind of people into my life? Your clientele is a reflection of you, right? Of who you are, of what you put out into the world. And sometimes that can hurt, right? That hurts when it's like, I have this whole clientele that takes advantage of me. They treat me like trash. But what do you expect? You've never set a boundary with them. You come in your sweatpants looking like a mess. You're hungover from partying all night versus somebody who is showing up 30 minutes before their client gets there. They are taking time to get ready to, they are wearing things that their clients are appreciating. They're talking about things they have in common, right? It all matters. It all matters. And there, I've seen topics and debates about this online where it's like, well, I don't need to, you know, I can wear whatever I want and dress professional and, you know, be who I want to be, blah, blah, blah. And I don't have to present myself any certain way. You absolutely don't, but you also then, I don't think, get the right to complain about your clientele or your business if that's the most important thing to you. If the most important thing to you is to be able to show up with your hair in a messy bun in your sweatpants, that's fine, but your clientele are just going to be a reflection of that for the most part. So yeah, it's like you leveling up is important if you want to level up your clients.
And I think too, there, I think this, I, I'm I'm thinking about when I first realized that, okay, I can show up physically in one form and attract people by, you know, looking like a certain thing, looking like a stylist who has it together. And I think a lot of people can do this well, but all on the inside, not just, you know, partying and showing up at a certain time to get ready and prep, but on the actual inside of who you are, stay with me, people. If you are not well, if you don't love, respect, and honor yourself, that will always, always, always come out. And a lot of time it does come out with that leading ego, which is, I can show up in my sweatpants because my work is so good or whatever, because I can do, you know, a row in 60 minutes and it's perfect and from start to finish, so I don't need to dress in any way. Well, that's your ego talking, and your ego is not the best way to lead a business. And I think sets you up for a lot of hard obstacles that you don't have to go through. If you're able to kind of sit down and be a little more honest, forgiving, and also real with yourself. It's getting deep. I'm like, just call Sosaman.
I love it. Well, and it reminds me, I think it actually maybe stems from the Bible, but my dad has always said pride comes before the fall. Yep. Right. And it's so true. Like, your ego can destroy everything or block you and limit you from everything. And so figuring out where your ego is showing up in your life and, you know, holding you back is, at least it was huge for me. But I completely agree, Hannah. And I'm like smiling the whole time listening to you because it's so true. And I see that conversation come up a lot on TikTok and I don't want to like shit all over, you know, Gen Z stylists, because I think, you know, I think some of them get a really bad rap, but I don't think they all fall into this bucket. But that has been an argument that I've seen pop up on social media of just, well, I can dress how I want, and unpopular opinion. And which is just an interesting argument to me. And I think it's one of those things too, maybe as you mature and get older, you learn. I don't know.
Yeah.
I know I was like a total slob kebab for a really long time, but my clientele was a reflection of that. It was more before I started my business. I was working in a commission salon, and I can like laugh and say these things about the sloppy stylist with a messy bun reeking of alcohol and being hungover, because I was that, you know, and my business looks drastically different, you know, now than it did 15 years ago. 12 years, however many years.
Two things. I love the phrase slop kebab so much. It's a perfect description. And yeah, I mean, everybody has places of growth in their business. I have always been very, very, very into fashion and style. So I enjoy showing up in super cute outfits put together, but I've certainly drop the ball in other places and had to work on things. So I think, you know, finding your strengths and weaknesses, but then making sure whatever your strengths are, you don't just like hang your hat on those and become so rigid in thinking that you have everything together, because, you know, small businesses that we run by ourselves or maybe with one or two assistants or whatever, these are like very multifaceted, multidimensional living things that require attention and cross-checking. And it's not just you have your ego in check and now your business is fine. It's, you know, so many different things. And at the heart of it, what I've learned and has brought me the most joy, happiness, peace, fulfillment in my business is that when I am confident and at peace and just really like happy with myself, I show up as the best version of me, which translates in every way in my business.
Amen. I couldn't agree more. I have nothing to add to that.
You're just such a little angel, and this has been a great episode.
Yeah, I can't wait to listen to it back. When are you going to upload it?
I can upload it today, right after.
I think you should. I think this is such a good sode, and I know a lot of the girls love listening to it on their way to work on Monday, know?
Absolutely. We will we'll plan an episode to kind of maybe do a back and forth ping pong match about websites. If you guys are interested in that, I definitely think it's worth talking about. And
I think that's a great conversation.
Yeah. And any other episode ideas, you can definitely or questions, you can definitely DM Haley and I on our personal Instagrams. We have the Nice Hair Podcast Instagram, but it's, you know, life's busy. So I think it's best to just
reach out to us.
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree.
I can put, you know, it's interesting too, Haley. Some people may find this podcast and aren't following us. So I'll put our Instagrams and everything in the link on this. So if you're listening on Apple or Spotify or wherever, you can find it.
Perfect.
Okay. Well, happy Sunday, ma'am. And enjoy the rest of your week, and it's full-blown December, so, you know, throw some snowballs or drink some hot cocoa or put up some Christmas lights or whatever you do.
I actually think we're doing Christmas lights today, so I'm really glad you said that.
Okay, you.
All right, thank you guys so much for tuning in, for listening. We love you. Han, love you so much, and we'll talk with you next time.
Love you. Love you guys. See you later.
Love you guys.
Bye.